Thanks again, Ufuk and Philippe, for organizing this conference. It's an honor to present at the Collège de France. This paper is joint work with two of my former classmates from Penn, Tanira and Mincho. And today I'm going to deviate a little bit, if you want, from the mainstream topics of this conference. So this will not be a model of endogenous growth. In fact, there will be no growth in that sense in this model. But what we're looking at will be at how distortions at the firm level might impact now the level of measured productivity in an economy. And in particular, how those distortions might be endogenous and might respond to rent-seeking behavior by firms. Said in another words, how lobbying activities, for example, by firms might affect, in some sense, the investment decision, and by that channel, affect the allocation of capital in the economy. That's, in some sense, the broad picture for today. So let me start with some stylized facts. I'm going to present some evidence of those facts in a moment, but this is just to give you the framework of how I would like you to think about this issue. So first, although when you look at the law, the corporate tax rate in the US is supposed to be flat at 34-35%, when you calculate it from the taxes that actually the firms pay and the profits that they are earning, you see strong variation. That measure is called the effective corporate tax rate, and it's very heterogeneous. The second thing is that, well, you might ask, what is one of the reasons why this might be heterogeneous? Well, tax benefits. There are benefits for doing R&D, there is benefit for accelerated depreciation, and those benefits might be heterogeneous across firms. I'm going to show you also that the most important benefits are tied to capital. And in that sense, one source of this heterogeneity will be related to size. Bigger firms might be able to claim more benefit just because they have more capital. The third point that I would like to put on the table is a nice point because it's a database that doesn't, it's not very used in the profession yet, at least not in macro, so I will present that database with a little bit more detail. You will see it's a database about corporate lobbying. It's a database about lobbying activities. And what I'm going to show you is that firms, not surprisingly, primarily lobby about taxation. So if you put these facts together, in some sense, the first question that might come to your mind is, can lobby generate distortions? How? Well, if big firms, in some sense, lobby in order to get benefits, and those benefits are tied to capital, the marginal cost that they are paying for their capital is different. In some sense, when you include all these, what you would see is that for small firms, the price of capital is different than from large firms. That would imply that large firms are in fact too large and small firms are too small. Then the second question that might come to your mind is how important might this be? What is the cost of this mechanism? What happened if the effective tax rate was in fact flat for everyone? That's in some sense the mindset for this talk. So let me start with the facts. The first fact that I was telling you. Heterogeneity in effective tax rate. This is the distribution of the effective tax rate. Effective tax rate for these figures are calculated as average over 3 years because these are noisy elements in the sense that sometimes a firm has losses 1 year and then they can claim those losses next year, and that's why it looks like it's very small, so you want to average over long periods. For this figure, I average over 3 years. This is robust to average over 10 years. The only thing is that it contracts a little bit. But most of the things that don't change is the average, for example. The average effective tax rate is much lower than that 35%. It's like 25%. And in this particular version, where we are averaging over 3 years, what you get is a standard deviation of 13%. So this is really a dispersed distribution. Let me move to the second fact. So the second fact I was telling you is that tax expenditures are linked to capital. Let me define a little bit what corporate tax expenditures are. So corporate tax expenditure is, in some sense, from the point of view of the government. So the government thinks, I am entitled to receive $100 through taxation. I am willing to spend part of that in benefits. So if the level of tax expenditure is 30%, it implies that instead of receiving 100, they are willing to receive 70, giving back those 30 in some way to the firms. Now, by law, every year you have to give in some sense the summary of where did you spend that money. And what you have here is the first top items of that expenditure. The number one item, accelerated depreciation, completely tied to capital. How should you think about accelerated depreciation? This is like a very cheap loan in some sense, because you should be able to depreciate only the part of your machine that wears out, but imagine that I allow you to depreciate it completely today. So in that sense, what you gain is all the future payoffs of that. It's like a loan with no interest in some sense. The other things that you see there are also very tied to capital. For example, foreign corporations, that imply that you have physical capital outside the US. Domestic production perhaps is less easy to relate, but you will be surprised when you dig a little bit in research tax credits. Most of the money that is tied to research tax credit is about exploration of oil. It's about digging holes. That's called research in that sense. And you know that digging those holes is very capital intensive. What is really interesting also, for the point of view of the model that we're going to show you, is the fact that every year in advance, the parliament needs to approve a budget for the next year. So the way we're going to think about lobby is about a fixed pie that firms would have to, in some sense, try to get a piece of. So in the model, the thing that I want you to start thinking about, there will be a fixed pie, and what lobby is going to do is going to determine who gets a share of that pie. Yes. So you take me a little bit out there. So I'm going to show you the lobby data. One way that I can show you about that, it's a table that I don't have here, would be the number of lobbying bills about R&D that are filed. 70 or 60% of those bills are about oil companies. And then when you go to case studies and you see in some sense how people claim this benefit, you see that a lot of the money is going to that. That doesn't mean that research credit is not allocated to good uses. I'm telling you that among all the money that goes, it's not that all of that is going to generate the kind of innovation that you have in mind. What do you mean by federal tax credit?
The one that was introduced in 1981 is horizontal.
Yes. So, well, typically you bring me there two details, but what you typically have is that the amount of tax credit that you can get has a cap. So what you do is you lobby in order to remove that cap for a given year, and you can claim much more benefit than what you would. That's in some sense typically what these companies that are lobbying in R&D are doing. They are removing the maximal cap of benefit that you could get. And that's where the heterogeneity in that particular thing comes from. I'm not going to exploit the R&D tax credit, but I prefer to answer because I think it's very interesting. Yes?
Just to clarify this fixed pie assumption that you mentioned. So then, for example, one firm lobby about a certain tax credit, wouldn't it be the case that all firms will benefit?
We're going to have that. Let me defer until the model and give you one line answer. We're going to allow for that. There will be benefits that are not going to be tied to lobby, that you can think of those as externalities on the lobby activity of other firms. That is going to be there in order for us not to overmeasure the benefits of lobby. So we're going to allow for that. Good. All right. So let me go to the third fact. The third fact has to do with the data, and I'm going to show you the data in a moment. So in the third fact, what I'm showing you is that if you look just at the raw data in terms of the bills that are filed by companies to influence the decisions in the parliament, when you look at the topics of those bills, the number one issue every single year is taxation. This is quite interesting because if you think this data has been used mostly in trade, but the issue on trade doesn't even appear in the top five. Trade, as a lobby issue, start appearing in the top seven at most. So in that sense, what I want you to keep in mind is that one of the main issues of lobbying, on corporate lobbying, is taxation. So the strategy, let me go a little bit fast here so that we have time to do all of this. I'm going to show you data. I'm going to match this lobby data to Compustat, and I'm going to document some facts. Those facts will be that firms that lobby are larger, they have lower MPK, marginal productivity of capital, and they pay lower effective tax rate. And that will be quite a systematic evidence. Then I'm going to write a very simple model. It's going to be an heterogeneous firm model. If you're familiar with the literature, I would like you to have in mind Restuccia and Rogerson. And I'm going to put there an endogenous lobbying decision, where there would be one market that would be very important, which is how the lobbying market clears, in some sense, how that pie is eaten. That would be the only big tweak, if you want, in the model. And then I'm going to do a quantitative exercise. So we're going to go back to the data. I'm going to show you that the output cost that heterogeneous taxation in general would generate in this model is 34 basis points. If you want this in relative terms, think about the cost of closing to trade is around 4%. So this fact, which is very industry-specific even, you could think that lobby is something very particular in manufacturing. I'm going to show you that it's also across the board, but you might think that it's only in manufacturing. This kind of dispersion can still cost 34 basis points on levels every year, which is sizable in that sense. And I am also going to show you that although we don't target anything in the dispersion of marginal productivity of capital, this model is going to deliver 11% of the dispersion that you see in Compustat. This is interesting because this will be the only source of dispersion. So all the other papers that you have seen in misallocation have their space there. And the nice thing about this particular story is that this is a story about big firms. Usually all the endogenous mechanisms that you have for misallocation are about small firms. Credit constraints are about small firms not having access to credit. Now I'm telling you a story about big firms distorting the prices, and that's what generates this misallocation. So, that's, yes. That I'm going to show you when we go to the result, but if you want, in one line is not distorted economy versus distorted economy, the level of output 34 basis point lower. What? Yes, yes, so the cost is 34 basis point when you have dispersed taxation versus not dispersed taxation. Ah, you say it's small. What is the benefit of opening to trade? 4% usually. So this is 1 over 10. I don't think that it is small when you are thinking that the fraction of firm that lobby in Compustat is just 8%. So I'm telling you that 8% of the firm in Compustat can make you the same cost that 1 over 10 opening the whole country to trade. I think that this is huge. You need to also think that this is the United States. In countries like ours, we might call this corruption. In the US, it's called lobby, and we have good measure. So if you think that this number is kind of mild or big, imagine how it might be if I had the data to measure it in other countries. Let me skip the literature in the interest of time and go to the empirical part of the paper. So the data from lobby is from the Center of Responsive Politics. I'm being conservative when I tell you that I observe every lobbying expenditure above $5,000 in a single quarter, because the cutoff at some point goes lower, and it's like 2,500. I will see the name of the involved entity and the list of issues. There is a total general issues of 81. I'm going to be able to pin down exactly the one that I want, which is taxation. For the ones that don't know Compustat, that's the list of public tech health firms in the US, and I can get from there everything that I need in order to build the effective tax rate and even to estimate productivity, and therefore getting the marginal productivity of capital. If you're interested, we're using the Wooldridge method to get productivity. Those are just technicalities. Let me show you a little bit how the basic data looks like. So this is, by law, what every lobbying firm, which is this entity that is hired by a firm, a corporation, in order to influence, in order to lobby, has to fill. Because you see, this corporation, this lobbying firm, they have to pay taxes also. So they need to declare every income that they get. This is the way they do it. So what you have here is first the name of the entity, in this case, General Electric, house name. And you also have the amount of money involved. In this particular bill, $150,000. What else do you have? You have the general issue that is coded. That implies that it's easy to put into Stata and work on it. That's a nice thing. If I had an army of arrays, I could go in any more detail. As you can see here that I'm not highlighting, you have the particular bill that was lobbied in that Congress, the particular initiative in that sense. Here you see Internal Revenue Code of 1986 to permanently extend the subpart F. These kind of things are exceptions, for example, in terms of what's the maximal amount of benefit that you could get. Sometimes they want to extend it permanently, sometimes it's for a given window of time. If you are interested in the data, you also have the name of the individuals that were involved in the lobby, and you could track in some sense their connection. That's where empirical political economy literature has been going. If you're interested, you could check the papers of Antonio Merlo. Let me jump to some descriptive statistics of the match sample between lobbying data and Compostat. So if you look just lobby on all issues and you look at the intersection, among all the money in the lobbying data, Compostat has 34% of that money. Now, if I do a close-up on tax-related issues, that's 45% of the involved money. This is huge because for taxation, it's not only firms, but it's also government and consumers and association of consumers that lobby. And just the firms in Compostat, I am able to capture practically half of the total expenditure of taxation, and taxation, as I told you, is the number one issue. Let me show you in one table the message of the empirical section. The rest of the slides in the empirical part will be to show you robustness of this. So what's going on here? What's going on is that there are very few firms that lobby only on tax issues, only 7% of the firm. Those firms account, in this particular way of slicing the data, 34% of the capital, so they are much larger. If you look at the median effective tax rate, they pay lower effective tax rate. And if you look at the MPK, this is log MPK, the difference is huge. We're talking about them being 30% or even 50% less productive, at least in the median. So this is, in some sense, the raw data. And the part that I like about the empirical thing that I'm going to show you is that most of the story I can tell you with the raw data. So I will slice the data in different ways, and then I'm going to run some regressions. Murat. I have a student very interested in that. Can we talk about this later? But yes, there is one issue that is financial. It goes up before the crisis, and it goes down even before the Lehman Brothers. So she's interested in understanding why. Otto.
So can you tell a little bit about the two-thirds of lobbying that's done by non-Compostat firms? How different is it from the part that you capture here?
Yeah, I don't have those statistics even in this paper. So we're thinking on writing a descriptive paper with those things. There are differences. There are important differences. For example, here, by construction, you don't have governments. Most of the foreign government lobby is about trade, in order to try to pass trade reform. So the composition of the issues changes. Taxation is the one most important among firms. The other things, I don't know to which database to match it, so in that sense, you don't know really what's going on. The other thing that I don't know is how many private firms are lobbying.
Second question, is this lobbying the central government, or is this also state government?
So this lobby database is strictly to parliament. You could have bills where it says, instead of House of Representatives of the US Senate, for example, the local government. Most of it is the House of Representatives, and that's the way we slice the data. Good. Excellent. Okay, so let me show you first distribution. In the upper part of this slide, what you're going to have is effective tax rates. In the down part of the slide, what you're going to have is marginal productivity of capital. Red is always going to be firms that lobby, and blue, firms that do not lobby. There will be some noise here because I'm doing nothing to the data. This is just the raw data. So here what you have is no time dimension. Just I take for every observation, I take for every firm the 3 year average of the effective tax rate or the MPK, and I plot the distribution. This looks a lot like stochastic dominance. So what you see is that firms that lobby have lower effective tax rate, and they also are less productive. We could slice the data a little bit more and ask for the time dimension. So what I have here is the same 3 year averages, but now I'm plotting the median over time. What you see is a strong difference in terms of effective tax rate, but also strong difference in terms of MPK. I could go even further and slice the data through industry time. So this one is a little bit more difficult, so bear with me. What you have in this axis is the effective tax rate of the firms, the median effective tax rate of a firm in a given two-digit industry in a given year that did not lobby. And here you have the median in that very same industry, in that very same year, of the one that did lobby. So before the, below the 45 degree line, it means that in that industry, in that particular year, the firm that lobbied had lower effective tax rate. What you see is that most of the dots are below here, also here, so that the fact that lobbying firms have lower effective tax rate or lower MPK is quite robust. These guys here are services. We drop financial services, but we don't drop services in general. That's, in some sense, the kind of anomaly that you see there.
Medians.
With means, it looks very similar. It's just that with this Q distribution, sometimes we think that it's better to use a median. Good. So each dot here is an industry and a year. I can, because for maybe I have a little bit of time and you're interested, let me show you some robustness. So one might think that part of this is because, Okay. So, what are the robustness? I have in the appendix, but the button didn't work. That's a good question. Two things. One is, what if, yes, no multinationals. So you might think that deferral taxation might be ruling part of this. If you drop all the firms that have any multinational affiliation, you still get it. The other thing that you could do is to think that the way we are estimating productivity, which is the Wooldridge method, is really good for manufacturing, but not in other sectors. You look only at manufacturing, and of course, as you would expect, things look even better, because this is where most of the action is. What is interesting, and very quickly, is that if you work your math, this doesn't imply that the firms that lobby have also lower or higher MPL. Because if they have, they are so big that they have more labor and more capital, they, this relationship could hold also for MPL, and then perhaps the story has nothing to do with capital, but with some inherent difference of the firm that make them be bigger in some sense. So we do the stuff for MPL and they are reverted. So that story is discarded. That's in some sense the robustness. Good. All right. So let's keep rolling. Regressions. Yes. Yeah, we're trying to exploit that a little bit, but lobby is an extremely persistent behavior. We have you practically never go back after starting lobby, and the data is not that long. It starts in 98, and these are big firms, so there are very few switchers. So we can have, in some sense, case study, plot a little bit, but you're going to see now in the regression, I'm very open about this, the variable of interest is so persistent that it goes away with fixed effect. So I put all the controls that I can, but in terms of fixed effect, I will have issues. I could handle random effect, but I prefer just presenting this regression as conditional mean test. In some sense, I show you that the mean and the medians are different. Now I'm going to show you that those differences are robust to a bunch of controls. That's the way I prefer looking at this. But you're absolutely right. If I had more switchers, if perhaps the data was longer, that would be a great thing to do. That's what this is going to do. That's exactly what this is. So those kind of things I can answer. Those kind of things I can answer. So just because all of you seem so interested in the data, let me be more specific about the controls here. So this is a dummy that says, did you lobby 2 periods ago or not? Why? Because we try to take into account that there is a delay between your lobby and the result, and because this is so persistent, it's not going to change if it is 1 period or 3 period. Same thing, this is the intensive margin. You're going to see that, of course, because of the persistency, the thing that matters the most is the fact that you lobby or you don't lobby. This guy here, because it will be important, is capital intensity, which is in some sense what Arun wants to see. But there are other controls that are really important that have to do with the tax literature. So there are R&D credits, so we control by R&D intensity. There is the fact of being a multinational or not, we control for that. There is the fact that you maybe had an accounting loss last period, and you might be claiming, in some sense, those deferral tax benefit. We control by the result of your profit in the previous periods, in that sense, the operational loss. We take into account measures of intangible capital, because there might be changes related to that or on the benefits there, such as advertising or just straight intangible capital. We take, of course, into account leverage, and although I didn't put it in the list, all of these things are scaled by sales, and we have an independent measure of size that is, in this particular regression, the employment level in logs. Those are the controls in that sense. All of the regression has also a time fixed effect and industry fixed effect at the two-digit level. That's it.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
So, what is exactly the definition of effective tax rate? And, you know, in reality, how does it work, basically? So, a law passes, and the law is having some clause that is tailored towards particular type of firms, because I don't think a bill is just passing for a single firm, right? It's
more very good, very good. Things. Let me answer to the two questions independently. First, what is effective tax rate? That this is the way, in some sense, the accountant literature does. If you would like a quick thing, is I see the tax that you pay, I see the profit that you claim. They do corrections that have to do with the fair taxation, with benefits from equity, from debt, and they try to be as thorough as possible. We follow them on that. Now, in terms of the particular mechanism, the typical thing that you see, so the benefit, the laws are written in general ways. And typically what you lobby for are exceptions. These kind of exceptions are also very general. One that you see very often is the limit in depreciated acceleration. So there is a cap in the amount of money that you could use in order to go for depreciated acceleration. So what typically you see is that the firm, before building a factory, but when the factory is already in the plants, start lobbying aggressively in order to remove that cap in a particular region, for a particular period of time, things like that. And because you were the only one planning for this, when you see the realized people that claim this benefit, usually it's only one firm. So that is something that we don't exploit variation in the data, but there are case studies that document those kind of things.
I think what would really nail it, I mean, not you know, nail it down, but you know, make it sharper is using like event studies or you know, the bill defensive type of approach.
You know,
a bill passes, and before and after, how does the firms that the lobbied is changing before and after compared to other firms in the region or in the same, not region, you're saying it's region-based, but in the industry in general.
Sometimes it's region-based, sometimes it's not, but you're absolutely right. That's one direction that we have been thinking on pushing. At least in the empirics, it would be interesting. Excellent, good. So at the end of the day, what you see here is that those 2 or 3% difference that we were seeing on the median in effective tax rate are very robust. And also the difference in MPK are very robust. You see that 20% that I was telling you about and that 3%. So they are robust to all of these controls. What is also very interesting is what I was telling you at the beginning. The data suggests that even after controlling by size, more capital-intensive firms have lower effective tax rate and lower MPK. Remember, this is controlling by size. So in some sense, this is the macro evidence of the story that I want to tell. I agree with Ufuk that it might be even better to nail it down with case studies, but these kind of correlations are very conditional in some sense on size, on industries, on everything, and they are very robust. So it's hard to come up with a story where you will have firms that lobby and not think that they would get these benefits. Okay, so let me summarize before the model, because I have like 20 minutes. The primary issue of corporate lobbying will be, I hope that you are convinced, taxation. Higher capital intensity will be correlated with lower effective tax rate, and lobbying will be correlated with lower effective tax rate and lower MPK. Those are, in some sense, the ingredients that I'm going to hardwire a little bit in the model. So the model is going to be an heterogeneous firm model in the spirit of Restucci and Rogerson. And firms are going to use labor and capital to produce output, and there will be tax benefit, as Arun was asking. I will have tax benefits that are directly related to lobby and some that are not directly related to lobby. I'm going to give a lot of freedom to the ones that are not related to lobby so that they can capture part of the data that I don't want to hammer into the lobbying part. By that, I mean that I will allow those indirect benefits that are independent to lobby to vary across firms. So I will let, in some sense, different firms to have different benefits that are independent to lobby. What is really important, and the part that I want to emphasize, is that benefits are going to be finite, this finite pie that I told you. That implies that what is critical is to understand in which order firms can claim benefits, because some firms will be willing to claim more benefits than others. So if they start claiming further, there will be less for the others. So there will be strong general equilibrium effect. So I will have to find a way to parameterize what the order is. So one could assume that larger firms have more visibility, and in that sense, larger firms can lobby first. But then you will assume that the ones that lobby are exactly the more productive, because larger firms are the ones that are more productive. So what I'm going to do is to free that relationship. I'm going to allow this ranking, this political visibility, to correlate in any way with productivity. And that will be one of the fundamental parameters that I will try to infer from the data to try to understand how costly lobby might be. All right, so having said that, let's try to look at this in a little bit more detail. The production function is quite standard. So you have capital and labor. Labor is N this time because, of course, lobby is going to be L. And you have decreasing return to scale because you want to have a well-defined size distribution. And the part that I was telling you is that now the productivity process, I allow it to be determined jointly with this political visibility index that is epsilon. This political visibility index is going to correlate with productivity. You can think this as a correlation of size too. So at the end of the day, this is going to tell you, are the more productive firms the one that lobby, the less productive, or is it random? Are they orthogonal things? The model will allow for any of those things. How are you going to identify that? Well, the correlation between TFP and marginal productivity of capital is going to give you information about that. If very productive firms have very low marginal productivity of capital and they lobby, then most likely they were able to be ahead in the ranking. That's going to be the identification for this. Very good. So, how do benefits work? There is a benefit function. I'm scaling it by the tax rate just for tractability. It does nothing, that. And you're going to have different components. First, benefits are going to be proportional to capital. So this is coming from the fact that I told you that most of the benefits are tied to capital. They are tied to capital in a decreasing way. Sometimes the more capital you have, the more benefit, but at decreasing rates. Then there's going to be a fraction that is independent from lobbying effort, the one that Arun was asking and the one that I told you that I will allow it to be heterogeneous across firms, so that I don't force all the variation in effective tax rate to come from lobbying. So that part of the variation might come from difference in size or different in unobservable characteristics of the firm. Then there will be a fraction that will depend on the lobby effort, also with some curvature. And what is interesting, the variable that I want you to keep in mind is going to be this cutoff. So at the end of the day, there will be a ranking fighting for this pie, and the marginal guy is the last guy that is able to claim benefit. And because this is a full information equilibrium, this is like a war that you don't fight. You don't lobby unless you're sure that you're going to win. So everybody can observe the political connection, they can forecast exactly what the cutoff is going to be, and you're going to have an equilibrium that very few firms lobby. And they exhaust all the benefits. Excellent. So this is a complicated way of saying exactly what I said. So this is the market tiering that I was telling you about. What you have here is, on this side, all the tax that the government would collect. The parameter omega is the tax expenditure part. That 30% that I was giving in my example that the government says, you know what? For every $100 that I should get because of taxation, give me 70. You can keep 30. And we see how I give it to you. So that's, in some sense, the size of the pie. On the left-hand side, you have all the people claiming for the pie. In order to keep the things tractable, what we assume is that the common benefits are the first one to be given. And only if there are leftovers, there will be benefit associated to lobby. So we first give everything that is not related to lobby. This is a way, in some sense, also to tight our hands, because you will get much more effect out of lobby if it was the other way. And then what you do is you sequentially allocate this as a function of the political visibility. And when this equation holds with equality, you have the cutoff on political visibility that determines who lobbies and who does not. So the problem of the firm, at the end of the day, you maximize the expected discount profits. This is the after-tax, production, labor cost. You could include the capital cost inside. It doesn't make any difference. Here what you get is the tax benefits. There is a quadratic cost on the lobby expenditure, and then there is the accumulation of capital. Of course, as you can see, lobby and capital are going to interact. This is the optimal lobby that will depend on your political visibility with respect to the threshold and, of course, on your capital. That's, in that sense, the mechanism of distortion. So people that know that they're not going to win in that game, they're not going to lobby. People that know that they're going to win, they are lobbying this amount. And then you can get labor also as a function of capital and productivity. So you can see that at the end, you can solve this model numerically, but it's only one equation per firm because lobby and workers depend in that sense on productivity. Arun. Exactly. So this is an explanation of the data. The few papers that have lobby, they usually rely, for example, Bill Kerr has one, they rely on a fixed cost. And they say there is a fixed cost of lobby, and that's why you have very few firms that lobby, and the rest do not lobby. This is, I don't make a big deal of it, but we provide an alternative to this fixed cost, mostly because of my own taste. I don't like fixed costs, but at the end it's the same. You know. So what I do is there is a finite amount, there is a ranking, you start claiming, oh, there is no more, you cannot get it. But another way would be the fixed cost. Yes? They don't lobby. Well, if they lobby below 2,500, they could be lobbying and I would not observe it. When I see a zero, it implies, according to what they say, it implies that it is below the 5,000 threshold. So if you believe the way the data is collected, a missing would be that they don't lobby, a zero would be that they lobby below the lower bound, and a number implies that they lobby above the lower bound. Now, if you ask me how confident I am about that in order to exploit it, not that much, because I don't know if the guys that are going to put a zero go all the pain of doing the filing. But in theory, yes, I could identify those. Arun? No? Okay, excellent. Let's continue then. Quantitative analysis. So, there is a proposition that we prove. I'm going to show you, at the end of the proposition, what it does is showing you that the policy functions look fine. So what I'm going to show you in the policy function, we can prove it, but I don't want to bore you with the proposition. So I'm going to calibrate the model. I'm going to evaluate the calibration using some non-targeted moments, nothing fancy there. I'm going to show you those policy functions that I was telling you we have an idea of how they look. And then we're going to go through some results. Some of those results will have the flavor of validation, others the flavor of quantification. So let me show you the calibration a little bit. I don't want to go in that many details, but there are at least two parameters that I think that are important to talk about. Among the parameters that we are calibrated externally, most of them you can directly take from the data. This omega parameter is the one that perhaps you forgot and one plays a role, which is the level of tax expenditure. So that's the fraction of tax revenue that you're willing to forgo. That you can take it directly from the data because the government has to report it. And we take the number that is the average for 2012 and 2013 that says that the government gives away 33% of those benefits. In terms of the calibrated parameters, most of the moments that we are doing calibration or simulated method of moment, depending if you are Jamari or Ufu, whatever you want, the ones that we are doing, it's most of them have to do with the fraction for example, the size of the lobbying. There is we target the fraction of firms that lobby, the average lobbying expenditure as a relationship to the wage bill, and those things are going to give you information about the cost, things like that. The only one that perhaps is less straightforward, but I already give you the intuition, is this correlation. So the correlation between productivity and marginal productivity of capital, the difference correlation between the firm that lobby and the firm that do not lobby is going to pin down how correlated the political visibility is with productivity. If this was random, you would expect this correlation to be zero in that sense, if the two groups will have the same correlation. But if the groups have different correlation, this is going to tell you, are the more productive firms that lobby or the less productive firms that lobby? With this particular value, this is telling you that the TFP of the firm that lobby is higher. Now, given that TFP, they're going to accumulate capital and even over-accumulate capital because of lobby, and their MPK is going to be lower. Okay. So how do we do in terms of moments? The model is quite simple, but we get the things kind of right. Here you have one extra moment, which is this old firm that is not targeted, but is implied in some sense by the other moment. That's why, in order to be honest, I put it there. But this bottom part is the one that we are targeting. And I think that for a simple model is as good as it gets. I can show you a little bit in terms of non-targeted. Let me show you one distribution. So this is the lobby distribution in the data, and this is the lobby distribution in the model. The only thing that is targeted in the lobby distribution is the mean. And at the end, the two distributions look quite similar. I put there a moment. So this is one of the validations that we think is nice. Okay, I have other distributions, but I prefer to show you the one that looks nice. Now, okay, policy functions. So what I was telling you that we could prove is in some sense this handshake. Let me tell you a little bit what's going on here. So what you have, so remember that in some sense here you have three state variables. You have the political visibility, you have the productivity of the firm, and there is also the idiosyncratic level in some sense of benefit that you can claim. So these are policy functions evaluated at the mean of that other variation. And what you see is clearly the cutoff in visibility. So these firms are the ones that are lobbying because those are the ones that are above the cutoff of visibility, and these ones are not lobbying. What you see here is that, in general, all the firms that lobby have lower effective tax rates. But that lower effective tax rate gap is increasing in productivity. Those are the things that you can prove in the lemma. So here you see, in that sense, where the difference between lobbying and non-lobbying firm is coming in effective tax rate, where it's coming in marginal productivity of capital, and here you have the lobby expenditure, labor, and capital. What kind of source of misallocation can you get here? Well, if you look, for example, at a firm here, this firm here is more productive than this firm here. But these firms, in terms of MPK, the relationship is reverted. So you have more productive firms that, in that sense, are much bigger at the point that their MPK end up being lower than the one of firms that are, in fact, per se more productive. Let me show you a little bit of non-targeted moment and some implications of the model. So if you look at the fraction of capital in the model held by the lobbying firm, remember that the ones that I showed you was an average over all the period. Now I'm focusing on the period that we calibrate, 2012, 2013. In the data, that's 46%. In the model, this is non-targeted and it's 66%. If we compare to manufacturing, it looks much better, mostly because, as you see, a model where you have a production function and you estimate productivity is much closer to manufacturing sector than others. The median MPK, we also do very well, but what I wanted to show you is that this standard deviation of log MPK that is non-targeted, this is the 11% that I was telling you. So this is how much of the dispersion we can get compared to the data. So you need to think that there are a lot of other mechanisms that would generate this dispersion, capital adjustment costs, financial friction. Just throwing in heterogeneous taxation gets you this. Not all of this is due to lobby. All of this is the combination of the capital benefit and the heterogeneous taxation. We're going to try to decompose this in a moment, too. Let me tell you a little bit on how we can evaluate, how we can get a counterfactual economy in order to understand the cost of these things. So this is how we're going to proceed. You can think of an economy that has the same level of aggregate capital than the distorted economy, and that economy has a flat tax rate for all the firms. How can you do that? You just iterate in some sense in the optimal tax rate that end up making the two economies to have the same capital. Because the tax rate there is flat and doesn't depend on capital or lobby or anything, by construction there is no distortion at all. So then what you can do is to calculate the output loss of the TFP loss, or you can do what I'm going to do now, which is for a given firm, think how much more capital or how much less capital they have with respect to that particular economy. So that's this graph. Let me try to spend some time in this graph because it has a lot of information on it, and I think it's interesting. So what you have here in blue, as usual, is the firm that do not lobby. In red is the one that lobby. Here you have productivity. What you have here is the ratio of the capital in the baseline economy with respect to the capital in that economy with no distortion. So whenever this ratio is larger than one, that implies that that particular firm is larger than what it should be. When it is lower than one, it implies that that firm is smaller than what it should be. If it is exactly one, that firm is the right side, of course. So what I'm plotting here is the mean of the distribution, and this is one standard deviation. Where does the variation come from? The variation comes from the difference in the idiosyncratic, non-lobby-depending benefit that you get, where we allow the model to tell us what variation is orthogonal to lobby. So from that, what you can see is basically the difference across productivity in terms of the size distortion. What I'm also plotting here is the distribution of firms. Here you have the firms that do not lobby, where they live in the productivity dimension, and the firms that do lobby. So this is telling you two things. Very few firms lobby, and the ones that lobby are, in fact, more productive in terms of TFP. But the ones that lobby accumulate so much capital that they are much bigger than what they should be. All of the red line is above one. And in that sense, lobbying firms are too big. You also see that low productive firms that do not lobby, they are too big. Why? Because the common benefit is large enough that distorts completely their accumulation of capital. But that benefit is not that large so that very productive firms end up being too little. Very productive firms that do not lobby are too small in this economy. That's exactly this. And this has to do with the political connection. So let me show you a little bit kind of a decomposition of this. So the 35% that I had at the beginning is when I compare, for example, the TFP of the benchmark with a benchmark where there is no tax benefit at all. So let me explain this a little bit. Now I'm letting output and capital to move in the economy. That's why the right measure is going to be TFP. In order to take exactly the same model, I'm taking the calibrated model with exactly the same tax rate and shooting down parameters. So here, here I'm shooting down completely the tax benefit. So this is an economy where everybody pays 34%. There is no dispersion. Of course, the output level is lower, but that's why the right measure is TFP, because TFP is independent of the level. It's the relationship between output, capital, and labor of the economy. So in that sense, when you compare this number with that number that are in logs, you get the 35 basis point lower TFP. Now, if you just shoot down lobbying benefit, you leave the distribution of the benefit that are independent to lobby, and you leave also the dependent on capital intensity. That's the TFP loss that you get, which is 19%. When you compare those two numbers, this is telling you that half of this distortion is coming strictly from lobbying, or lobbying and the interaction of the other things in that sense. So about the 35 basis point, you have that more than half of it comes from lobbying. This is a nice experiment. I will refer you to the paper, but let me tell you in one line what we do. We take all the parameters as given, and then we change only one parameter, the size of the pie, and we put it to what it was at the beginning of the sample, 10 years before. And we show that the changes in the model that are completely non-targeted are in line with the data. So the effective tax rates have decreased over time, the fraction of lobbying firm, all of those things go exactly in line by changing only one parameter. So you could think this either as a validation or a way of explaining what had happened over time with effective tax rate and lobbying in the US. What happened when we move the level of political visibility in that sense? When the correlation is negative, the output loss varies from 0.42 to almost 0.3. There is a lot of interesting things that we could talk about this graph, but in the instance of time, let me try to use this graph that we already know and spent some time to understand the effect of political visibility. So the same story that we talked before, we can talk it here. So I'm going to show you three economies. The one that I'm showing you now is one where the correlation is minus 0.9. That implies that the first guys claiming the benefit are the less productive. This guy wants very little, so that implies that there is space for a lot of people lobbying. That's exactly what this is showing you. Now the distribution red is very high. That implies that you have a lot of lobbying firms, and lobbying firms are less productive than non-lobbying firms. That would be, in that sense, that economy. With most of the firm lobby, they are not very productive, and that's what's going on. If you want to understand the distortion of that economy, the distortion of that economy is the integration of these capital wedges over this distribution. So you will have a lot of firms that are distorted, but they are firms that are not very productive. And you will have a lot of firms that are not distorted, but these are firms that are very productive. Or in some sense, very productive firms are too small and not very productive firms are too large. If you change this, as you would expect with zero, the two fractions look very similar, and these look a little bit more like our baseline. So in some sense, how you travel within this distribution is pinning down the cost of lobbying, and that's what is behind these kind of things. What is interesting in this particular calibration, you don't see it, or you see it a little bit here, is that the loss has an inverted U-shape. So you need to pick, either you have very few firms, very distorted, or a lot of firms, very little distorted. That's in some sense the trade-off that is underlying in the model, and that trade-off is governed by rho. So let me conclude in my last 10 seconds. What I show you is, in some sense, interesting, suggesting empirical fact. I am with Ufuk that if I would like to claim causality, I would have to go further. But I think that this is enough conditional correlation to give the burden of the proof to the audience. In terms of the model, this is a simple model with an intelligent trick, I would think. There is only one thing to understand with respect to a traditional firm heterogeneous model, which is this lobbying market that I'm clearing. And we get quite a bit of millage out of it quantitative. I think that 11% of the dispersion of MPK is a sizable number, especially because I'm looking at big firms that people haven't looked before too much. And I also think that the cost, when you compare it, for example, to the cost of opening to trade, is a sizable cost. That's it. Thank you.